is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. And coming up on Africa News Tonight, gunmen killed 62 volunteer fighters in Nigeria's Kebbi State. And UN Human Rights Chief says she continues to receive reports of wide-scale human rights abuses in Afar, Amhara, and Tigray regions of Ethiopia. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Gunmen have killed 62 vigilantes in Nigeria's Kebbi State. According to a Reuters report, many northwestern states in Nigeria have vigilantes, groups of volunteers who help defend villages and towns from armed gangs as the security forces are stretched fighting Islamist militants. Last Sunday, the vigilantes were planning to attack a bandit's stronghold in the Sakibwa area, but the bandits were tipped off and laid an ambush, slaughtering 62 volunteers. The bandits have spread terror across northwest Nigeria, kidnapping hundreds of schoolchildren and villagers for ransom. In Ghana, Dr. Beatrice Wifi Adai, a breast surgeon and founder of Breast Care International, has called for more support to enable women pursue science, technology, and engineering and mathematics in secondary school and aspire for greater heights professionally. For International Women's Day, Mavis Ochira in Jiwaso in the Ashanti region of Ghana tells us about Dr. Wifi.
In Ghana, Dr. Beatrice Wifi Adai leads the fight against breast cancer. She's founded hospitals that specialize in treating cancer in women and created Breast Care International, an organization working to increase public awareness of breast cancer. But she says starting out as a surgeon wasn't easy. Dr. Wifi, who is the first Ghanaian female specialist general surgeon, says some people discourage her from pursuing surgery.
It was very challenging, but I liked it. I enjoyed surgery, and my bosses at the time, those people gave me the encouragement to move on and to let me know that, yes, it's difficult. A lot of people will discourage you, and I had my fair share. I remember some bosses even advising me to opt out of surgery because it wasn't for women, and that I'm a wife, I'm a mother, and so doing surgery was going to be very difficult, and so I should rather go and do some less challenging disciplines. But I loved surgery, so I didn't listen.
She has focused on breast cancer, which the World Health Organization says is the most frequent cancer among women and causes the greatest number of cancer-related deaths among women. Wifi says the Global Cancer Observatory estimates that 4,500 cases of breast cancer occur annually in Ghana. She says the government needs to help make breast cancer tests and care accessible to women, especially in poor communities. Many patients seek treatment only after cancer has spread, she says, which results in higher deaths.
We don't want any woman to die because she has no money to cure herself of breast cancer. And in Ghana, we know about 2,000 plus women die yearly from breast cancer, according to GlobalCan. More than 4,600 are diagnosed yearly. And the figures keep increasing. And these figures are women. They are people behind the statistics. And so we need to look at it as a challenging disease that's affecting a lot of our women. And as we talk about the International Women's Day, we should not forget breast cancer, which is taking the lives of a lot of our loved ones.
This year, the theme for International Women's Day is Break the Bias. As part of her work, Wifi wants to break what she says is a bias against women studying science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM subjects. She says in Ghana, fewer girls pursue STEM education than boys, as many people think science-related subjects are more suitable for boys. For the past 12 years, with support of her siblings, she has sponsored 10 brilliant but needy girls studying science and mathematics. She also has helped 35 young Ghanaian women study medicine and graduate from medical school.
Sometimes women think that science, technology is so difficult, mathematics, it's so difficult, the engineerings are not meant for boys. I don't believe in that. And so this is going to help a lot of women to come up and to understand that you are a woman, but you can be a doctor, you can be a surgeon, you can be a neurosurgeon, you can be a mathematician. And if we are able to stand up as role models, it will encourage our young girls.
Riafi says there are some places in the country where you would find strong biases against women, and that women confront challenges in managing their homes and their careers. She says the quest to remove the bias means women should have a fair playing field. Being the first female and the sixth born of 11 siblings, her quest to attain higher education almost failed after secondary school because Riafi's father asked her to stop school so other siblings could continue. A scholarship from the National Council of Women and Development helped her to pursue medicine in the then Soviet Union. Now, her three daughters are medical doctors, as well as one son. Her other son is studying artificial intelligence. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Jaso, in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
The UN Human Rights Chief says more than 300 people have been killed by airstrikes since November in northern Ethiopia, where the human rights and security situation has deteriorated significantly. Speaking at the Human Rights Council in Geneva, Michelle Bachelet said her office continues to receive reports of severe and wide-scale human rights violations in the context of expanding conflict in Afar and Amhara regions, as well as in Tigray. Reuters reported that Ethiopia's envoy to the Human Rights Council, Mahalet Hailu Gudai, dismissed Bachelet's statement, saying the state of emergency has been lifted and detainees and prisoners have been released. Ethiopia's government has regularly denied targeting civilians in a 16-month war against forces loyal to the Tigray People's Liberation Front. Ethiopia also reiterates its firm commitment to address human rights violations. Bachelet also said her office has received reports of 306 rape incidents by Tigrayan forces in the Amhara region between November 1st and December 5th. Following Moscow's invasion of Ukraine, the United States and its Western allies have moved swiftly to implement devastating sanctions on Russia's economy to heighten the cost of the war. Nevertheless, Moscow has spent considerable resources in recent years rebuilding its military and economic presence throughout Africa. Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what Russia's goals are on the African continent and whether the sanctions would upset its calculations.
I think Russia has three major goals in Africa. The first is to gain a physical presence in the southern Mediterranean and along the Red Sea. And we've seen that in terms of their efforts to secure ports in Libya and in Sudan and Eritrea, as well as developing collegial relations with northern African countries like Algeria and Egypt, so that Moscow has a strong presence on the southern flank of NATO, as well as it's often a position where it can influence shipping routes through the Suez Canal and the Bab el-Mandab between Yemen and Djibouti. Secondly, you know, Russia is trying to expand its presence and its prestige as a global power in Africa by opportunistically expanding its influence within selected African countries that are facing crisis, and to do so at the expense of the West. So it wants itself to be seen as a global actor that needs to be considered in all parts of the world, including in Africa. And the third major objective that Russia has is to try to undermine democratic norms and values. You know, it is intentionally, through its disinformation and other messaging efforts, trying to create the impression that African countries face a trade-off between democracy and stability. And by doing so, it is effectively creating a justification for why authoritarianism is needed in Africa. I think given the nature of each of those objectives and the way Russia is going about pursuing them, the sanctions will not have an immediate effect. Most of these are low-cost ventures that are done in collaboration with pliable African leaders who are vulnerable and who have sought out Russia's support. So in the short term, no, I don't think the sanctions will make a big difference. Over the long term, I think they will, because they'll expose that, you know, Russia has relatively little to offer these countries by way of economic development, support, and investment. And the sanctions will also highlight what a pariah that Russia is. And I think this will lead to more pushback within these countries for ongoing relationships with Moscow.
Russia's economic interests are narrow across Africa, limiting any influence over the African economies. However, in response to more sanctions from the West, Russia could increase arms sales to African countries and use private military companies such as the Wagner Group in places experiencing political instability, such as Mali. Is that a feasible scenario?
Well, it is, and it's true that Russia represents less than 1% of the foreign direct investment that goes into Africa. You know, that's smaller than the amount that Mauritius commits to the rest of Africa. So, you know, Russia has instead thrived in recent years by exploiting the weakness of certain fragile African countries by swooping in and propping up vulnerable, isolated leaders. You know, it's effectively what they did in Syria that they're now doing in selected African countries. They do this through arms sales. You know, Africa, so Russia provides 50% of the arms that go into Africa. The deployment of Wagner mercenaries provides muscle, provides a means that can enhance the coercive capacity of certain isolated, illegitimate African leaders. These things don't cost a lot of money. So they're low-cost initiatives, but they're high impact because they gain the support and influence of those individual leaders. It's an elite-based strategy. And because there are relatively weak checks and balances within these African countries that can't curtail the power of these individual leaders, it gives Russia a wide scope. You know, it's a permissive environment. And so we can expect to see Russia continuing to try to apply its influence through these means. And because these African leaders are benefiting from this collusion, they are not going to be the ones who are pushing back. Instead, you know, that pushback, the calling out and the accountability for Moscow's heavy-handed and often illegal measures in Africa is going to have to come from civil society groups, opposition leaders, and regional organizations like the African Union and ECOWAS.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi. A clash between locals and foreign nationals in Alexandria's township in Johannesburg has left several people injured, vending stalls destroyed, and many businesses shut. The fight broke out when a group of local residents went around the township forcibly shutting down businesses owned by foreign nationals and asking South Africans to take over their stalls. Police have since calmed down the situation, but residents have vowed to shut down the township until foreigners leave. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
For the past 3 weeks, the group calling itself the Alexander Dudula or Chess Out Movement has been visiting shops and vending stalls in the township, asking all undocumented foreign nationals to leave. Shops have been shut down and vending stalls dismantled. Violence broke out when township residents attempted to take over vending spots belonging to foreign nationals. Both sides used stones, bricks, and other weapons, and about 10 people were injured. The movement spokesperson, Agnes Malaji, told a group of journalists that foreign nationals are to blame for the violence that erupted.
People are intimidated, people are terrified. One of the leaders, Mr. Dube from Zimbabwe, said something very disturbing, that if government doesn't intervene, people will die and blood will be spilt because they are not prepared to go back home. So South Africans are shaken by this.
However, this Zimbabwean national, who preferred to remain anonymous, accused South Africans of starting the violence. Speaking in Isindebele, this man says the South African citizens attacked the neighboring store and now the vendors are now forced to retaliate to protect themselves from being abused by locals. The South African residents say they should operate and benefit from all business opportunities in the township, not foreigners. South Africa has been welcoming to foreign workers over the past few decades, and there are 4 million migrants in the country. But with the country's unemployment rate topping 30%, there has been growing anti-foreigner sentiment in South Africa. At times, that has led to violence. Business owners say the anti-foreigner protests are disrupting business. Shop owner Valen Mudli told journalists they want President Cyril Ramaphosa's government to intervene.
For 2 weeks now, we've been running around like crazy. But we've got to pay rent. We've still got to pay the loans off to the banks that we've taken. Please, I'm begging you, Mr. Ramaphosa, please come out here with your ministers and help us solve this situation once and for all.
The group has vowed to shut down the entire township until all foreign nationals leave. Police District Commissioner Brigadier Masha said police will not allow it.
Those that want to protest, they are free to do so, but they should not interfere with the free movement of the people in Alexandria. And if you find anybody breaking the law, they'll definitely be arrested.
Tension between locals and foreign nationals over jobs, livelihoods, and use of public facilities have risen sharply this year, but this is the first incident where foreigners have retaliated. Government ministers last week cautioned such groups like the Dudula movement to stop taking the law into their hands. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Nigerian activist Sunday Igbo, who has been imprisoned in Benin since last year, has been released under court supervision. Igbo, who advocates for independence for the southwestern Yoruba people, has been detained in Benin's capital, Cotonou, on accusations of criminal association. According to the French news agency AFP, Nigeria has been seeking his extradition since July 2021, when he fled following a raid on his home in the city of Ibadan. Nigerian officials said they had found military equipment and weapons at the house. He was arrested last year in Benin while attempting to board a flight to Germany. Madagascar recently was hit by 4 tropical cyclones in the space of 1 month. I asked World Meteorological Organization WMO's representative for Eastern and Southern Africa, Mark Majodina, about the cyclones this season. He began by explaining the weather factors contributing to so many storms.
The Indian Ocean, tropical Indian Ocean, is generally quite warm, and the actual formation usually takes place when you have sea surface temperatures above 28 degrees Celsius. So normally this is driven by 2 important factors. One is the Indian Ocean dipole, which really is the warming of the western part versus a cooler eastern part, and vice versa. The second driver is usually the ENSO, which is happening over the Pacific Ocean. And in this period, we've had a weak La Nina phase, whereas in the Indian Ocean, we've had a neutral Indian Ocean dipole, where the western parts of the Indian Ocean, especially close to the African continent, temperatures were fairly neutral, which meant that the warmer part of the Indian Ocean was over the central equatorial Indian Ocean, which is actually where most of these tropical cyclones which have hit Madagascar have originated.
So these storms have very big impacts on people's lives on the ground. So what kind of method do you have to forecast the coming of a storm or cyclone very early so as to help the disaster management community prepare in advance?
Right. So we have quite a good forecasting scheme through international collaboration. Obviously, the Meteorological Service or the Weather Service in Madagascar plays an important role. But within the WMO, we have what we call the Regional Specialized Meteorological Center in La Reunion, operated by Meteo France, where they do seasonal forecasts. So the seasonal prediction for this season actually took place around October in 21. And it was already seen by then that we would have these above normal tropical cyclone over the Southwest Indian Ocean. So as early as October last year, we were already expecting above normal tropical cyclones with, say, intensity that could really be destructive. Of course, the closer you get to the time, the better the forecast. We have short-term forecasts that are done globally, but especially by the Meteorological Service in Madagascar. We've been able to track down these tropical storms as they develop over the Indian Ocean and follow them through at least 10 days before. So we've been following them all the time with a fairly good amount of accuracy, which has really assisted in getting the humanitarian organizations ready in evacuating quite a number of people, resulting in lives being saved.
Mark Majodina, WMO representative for Eastern and Southern Africa. Thank you for your input, sir.
Yes, no, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
That was Mark Majodina, the World Meteorological Organization's representative for Eastern and Southern Africa. He spoke with me from Nairobi. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehia Suhid in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Montbella Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's Premier Men's Basketball League to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt, and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7 FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station,